Bailey Beadle, senior partner of Beadle and Tatum, a South Florida private investigating firm specializing in cases of provoked absquatulation, was mulling over his morning mail. Having heated and spiced it with aromatic herbs from the Netherland West Indies, he prized open an envelope flap with the edge of his pince-nez. Inside was the latest action alert paper from ASCAP, the Ad Hominem Stochastic Commissioning Awards Panel, a group of arts funding administrators for which he served as outreach coordinator.
Wait, you mixed several languages in the name of that ASCAP. That's wonderful. Let's hear that again.
The Ad Hominem Stochastic Commissioning Awards Panel.
I love it.
We're members, aren't we?
We are.
The organization helps secure substantial sums of money from wealthy patrons of the arts, on paper anyway, and redistribute it to needy composers, authors, and pastry chefs in return for sparkling new sonagas, novellas, and blancmanges. Is that blancmangie?
I don't know. I never had one.
Oh.
I have had many things. I've had blemishes, I've had blooms, I've had blepharospasms, but I have never had them blancmange things.
Ah, that's because you didn't apply for the proper grant.
I know, those ascetic stochastics.
Some donors were reluctant to participate in the project, seeing it as a one-way cash drain with no return on the investment. And that's where Bailey came in. As outreach coordinator, he was occasionally called upon to reach out and shake loose some spare change from the coffer of any would-be contributor who showed signs of hesitation. Bailey sniffed the envelope. Its bouquet was of tranquility with an underlying hint of violent reprisal and wheezing. Even the postage stamp, army ants devouring a shriveled dog carcass, was designed to send a message of intimidation. But for all of ASCAP's nasty posturing, the intent of the organization was worthy and necessary given the overt hostility towards government support of the arts in post-minimalist America. At first blush, the ever-burgeoning numbers... That does ring, doesn't it?
It does. So do these bells.
The ever-burgeoning number of commissions for new music and nouvelle cuisine might suggest that the world was ripe for a renaissance of pie, song, and doggerel, that the impending millennium could surpass even the 8th century monks of the Order of the Skull of Mantovani in terms of sheer creative output.
Oh, I heard of those. You've talked about the Order of the Skull of Mantovani before.
Yes.
Yes.
Alas. That would be wrong. As ASCAP was all too aware, most of their contributions occurred only on paper. There they were born. There they were politely discussed over tax-deductible luncheons by snooty plutocrats before being superseded by the arrival of more pertinent blancmanges, and there they died. It was a vicious cycle, and one which Bailey felt compelled to try to break. He reached into the bottom drawer of his desk and retrieved the loaf of halva he had last sampled 12 weeks ago during a different soliloquy. Don't have to repeat half a loaf.
Half a loaf, yeah. Don't have to repeat that.
I won't. Half a loaf.
No,
I won't.
Do not.
I won't repeat it. I won't. Harder than pitch and blacker than diamond, it represented much of what was wrong with arts and food in America. Its adjectives were askew, and it didn't fit a prescribed format. True, it was a metaphysical representation, but was the best Bailey could come up with given the sudden distraction of 100 two-dimensional ants crawling off of the stamp and attacking the halva with a fervor displayed only by insects and manic arts administrators.
Here come
the arts administrators, I hear them. They do that. They really
they
do that.
Yes, yes, they do. They sort of sound like insects.
The ants abruptly eschered into... Do you like that verb, eschered?
Love it. The fall of the House of Escher.
Yeah, they fell, but not these ants didn't... Never mind.
Never mind.
The ants abruptly eschered into four letters of the known alphabet. M-G-O-P.
M-G-O-P.
M-G-O-P? It made no sense.
M-G-O-P.
But then the M turned over.
M-G-O-P.
Yes, you're on to me. The left flank of the O straightened.
M-G-O-P.
And the... There, it straightened. And the poo, the P grew a second leg.
Mugger.
Instantly providing Bailey with the answer to the funding riddle. The former Marshall ants now spelled W-G-D-R. Yes, the Radiophonic Cooperative of Central Vermont, presently engaged in a fiduciary shakedown campaign of its own.
That's us. Shakedowns.
Yep.
Yep.
While that campaign, dear listener, may be in its waning kilo days, it is not too late for you to pledge your support to cash-strapped artistic endeavors such as our own, i.e. the 156th episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, which, no matter the fiscal Algonquin hole we continually are crawling out of, continues to champion the resurgence of Pi, Song, and Doggerel, or Le Flambeau
Orange,
as they pertain to the often discombobulatory contemporary arts. Hey, that's the ending to Wozzeck again.
It's that Wozzeck. Everybody likes that ending.
They do.
All that hip-hop stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
Here now to shake down or up the program as his capriciousness warrants, then, is Calvos.
So it is. It is the shakedown. It's the end of our shaking down. We won't do any more shaking down after this week, at least for another year. We have lots happening today on the Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar. Right now you are listening to John Luther Adams' Clouds of Forgetting, Clouds of Unknowing. This is a thing in lots of sections, 19 of them, and we like it, so we're going to play some more of it and ask you to call 454-7762 to make your pledge to WGDR and show your enthusiasm about the Calvos and Damien show beginning its fourth year in a couple of weeks.
Next week.
Next
week. I guess that doesn't count because it's a questionable week.
A questionable week. And if you're calling from a listenership out in the internet land, its area code is 802. If you're calling from even farther than that, the country code is 1-802-454-7762.
Remember, that's Glipsob.
Glipsob. That's right. 1-802-GLIPSOB. And we'll let you listen a little bit more of John Luther Adams. Today, our guest, John Appleton, at 3 o'clock.
Who is related to John Luther Adams, we find out.
By first name.
By default.
Yes. Yes. And finally, and in a couple of minutes, after listening to a little bit more of John Luther Adams, we'll hear seven or eight sections from the Frog Peak Collaborations Project. And now, the music. The first five sections from John Luther Adams' Clouds of Forgetting, Clouds of Unknowing. That's performed by the Apollo Chamber Orchestra with Joanne Folletta conducting. Does a lot of new stuff, not usually of this kind, though. That's kind of interesting.
I thought splendid. And I think just while we have a moment here,
yes,
we want to entertain our international internet guests, listeners.
Yes.
Yes, I did some research.
No.
These are weather forecasts for people in Rangoon and Ouagadougou.
Oh, let's hear.
Because they need to know. If you're listening in Ouagadougou, tomorrow it will be partly sunny, hot and very humid, high of 104. Same on Monday, partly sunny, hot and very humid, high of 104. Rangoon, you're a little more lucky, still hot and humid, high of 96. This is Fahrenheit. This is not Kelvin, by the way.
Oh, yes.
And Monday, periods of cloud and sun, hot, very humid, high of 94.
That's good. And so for all those folks in those areas, you can pledge your contributions to WGDR at +1 802-454-7762. And as a special premium for this particular hour, and only available in this hour, is a 2-CD set, the Frog Peak Collaborations Project, for a $50 pledge. You can have this 2-CD set, and we're about to play a few more cuts from that. We'll remind them probably next week of how this is built on this sound poem by Chris Mann. But let's, for the moment, just hear of them. This is the 32nd cut, probably around through the 39th cut. And when we get back to you, we'll tell you who those composers are.
If you're calling to pledge, you need not pledge in American currency. We'll take whatever currency you wish to pledge.
Maybe not zlotys. I don't think we have a truck big enough.
We could get one.
Okay, well, trucks it is. 454-7762, while we listen to some more cuts from the Frog Peak Collaborations Project.
Stop. I didn't think. I'm going to go to the hospital. Selections from the Frog Peak Collaboration Project on a text by Chris Mann and read by Chris Mann, posted on the internet. Those pieces were by David Wardle, Chopper Squad, Paul Dornbusch, Iceberg, Lawrence Fritz, Minute Variations 1 to 4, or that could be Minute Variations, depending on, let's see, does his name acronymize into Chopin? No, it doesn't. Lawrence Fritz. And then this one we'll read you about. Ernie Althoff and Graham Davis wrote in the notes, "Composers Althoff and Davis are not linked to the internet. Neither of them own digital taping equipment, nor do they have access to it through connections with academic institutions. Recently, they discussed the meaning of the word exclusive. The piece was entitled Best Intentions, and if you heard nothing, that's what it was, a nice minute of silence." Oh, that was very nice. Oh, you don't have a microphone in front of you. Oh, well. Then we heard Fernando Iazeta's Crowd, and we wrapped up with Nick Fortunato's Filter Man Sense, Filter Man E-Ip, and Filter Man Hyper. You can get this whole thing, 115 pieces by 62 composers, by dialing 802-454-7762 to pledge to WGDR Plainfield.
What's the amount of the pledge that you
for this one? $50. We'll give you pieces of stuff, various crumbs, for almost any amount. But if you want this whole set, $50 will do it. We also have some other premiums. Anything that you've heard announced in the past couple of weeks are available from the Calvos and Damian show as well. So we have a guest.
I guess we do. Someone did follow us in through the door, and it's always entertaining to see if that person is here to mug us or is here to visit. And I think we have both today.
We have the muggers and the guests. Well, the question is, what does the T-shirt say?
Well, I know, but I'm obliged not to say.
A good afternoon. My T-shirt says, Uchinchino Shabute Raska.
Now that we know what it says, what does it mean in English? You're welcome to say almost anything that the FCC will permit.
It means that I'm thrilled and delighted to be on the Calvos and Damian show.
I like a good liar. Our guest is John Appleton. Welcome to the show.
Drasici, it's a pleasure to be first time in Vermont with my friend Appleton. He wants me also to speak. My name is Boris Pustarovia.
And we understand that you take your name from the city in Wisconsin, do you not?
Yes, we have a relative in Wisconsin.
Who makes cheese?
Pustarovia, yes. What kind of cheese are you speaking?
I thought it was cottage, that you were a part of a cottage industry.
Oh, no, it's smegma.
Smegma cheese. Well, this is good.
You cannot say smegma cheese, because you see they're redundant,
not
smegma
not
and cheese.
Depending
you
on
can
the
only
cheese.
Say one or two.
No, you can say, what is the other phrase you can say? You can say all sorts of redundant things. We like redundancy. As a matter of fact, most of the music we play is redundant.
It's a great pleasure to be here. Спасибо большое.
Хорошо. Okay. Shall we continue? Let's try to shift this gear into some musical elements for our audience, because I'm sure they want to hear musical elements.
That sounds very good.
Good. Well, you introduce Mr. Appleton, please.
Yes, would you like to say hello to your audience, Mr. Appleton? Oh.
Yes, it's very nice to be here today, and I'm looking forward to your vast audience on the Internet having the opportunity to hear some of the music I have composed over the last 160 years.
That's right. We hear you're heading for retirement.
No, I'm not headed for retirement. I've just begun.
I knew it could provoke him to stay in normal English like that.
But the 160 years, that is Celsius, is it not?
Yes, that's right. Reimers.
Ah. Okay, let's do the history. This is the 5-minute history, because we've got to keep
okay,
it
I'll
down
go very
it's
fast.
So it's such an amazing story. Not only your story as a composer, but your story as shall we say a technologist, your story as a person who can sort of whip any kind of equipment into the shape that produces remarkable musical compositions, and all of those things. Let's do that.
And don't forget the wonderful Seamus organizational chapter of his life.
Oh, yeah, that part of that organization, the Society for Electroacoustic Music in the United States, that we didn't cybercast.
Well, I'm a former member.
Oh, as of last week?
Yes. But I will give you a 5-minute biography.
Yes, please. John Appleton.
Born in Hollywood, California, 1939. Father was a writer, worked for 20th Century Fox. Mother worked for MGM as a film editor. She was an abusive and seductive woman who put me in a home until I was 6. I was rescued by a Russian stepfather who had played in the New York Philharmonic and in the NBC Symphony. He raised me to be a musician.
Did you move east?
No, I did not. I was born and raised in Hollywood, California. Then I went to college at Reed College in Oregon. Then I traveled around the United States at various institutions of higher education until I could find someone who accepted me. When I finally rounded my found my place in Oregon, it was only because they would let me do anything I wanted. In those days, you had to write serial music, and I didn't like cornflakes.
Those days would have been when?
That would have been in the late 50s, early 60s.
Did you know Arpad Illo?
No, I did not.
Because he's written the Battle Creek March, which in fact is a serial piece.
We've
had it on the air.
All right. Then I went, got interested then in electroacoustic music, and I went to Columbia University where I worked for 1 year because that was one of the few places you could do that in the United States.
Those were the halcyon days of Columbia.
They were.
Yeah.
Yes, there were very many wonderful people in my class. Charles Dodge, Richard Taruskin, Jacob Druckmann, people of all ages, Emmanuel Gent, Walter Carlos, a lot of people who later went into the field of electroacoustic music and some who didn't. And then I, by some chance, wound up at Hanover, New Hampshire.
How does one, I mean, from Hollywood to you're migrating east to up to Oregon and then out to Columbia and then up to Hanover, how does that happen?
Well, it happened because my parents were communists and they were also Jews. And since Dartmouth did not want to have any communists or Jews on their faculty, I took a new identity, thus Appleton, because I was born with the name Appleboyne. So I hid my true identity in many ways than I have described to you now, including being married with two children and leading a perfectly normal life as a young college professor at an all-male Ivy League school. I fit in so well that I was rapidly promoted and became the Arthur R. Virgin Professor of Music, a position I now hold at that distinguished institution to the South.
Distinguished. That's good. And that's the
That's the rest of the story.
That's the CV. And how about the Sinclair story?
Ah, yes. Well, you see, secretly, I only wanted to write music that sounded like Rachmaninoff, and he still remains my favorite composer. But because I was living in the late 20s...
This is true.
This is all true. This is all true. But because I was living in the second half of the 20th century, I had to write avant-garde music. Well, I didn't know what that was. But by chance, I discovered electroacoustic music. That enabled me to write very beautiful music that was also avant-garde. And so I did that, and after a while, I discovered that the audience was so small, and I assumed that that was because people could only hear it on loudspeakers and couldn't see anybody make it. So for a number of years, I worked with some engineers and helped develop a live performance instrument for musical composition and performance. It was called originally the Dartmouth Digital Synthesizer and then became known as the Synclavier, quite by chance. My first choice was the clavicin. But since sin seems to be something that is verboten in New England, we called it the sin clavier, and that is where the clavier can wipe away the sins that are committed by the composer. And the purpose of this was to be able to play live electroacoustic music. That's what it was invented for. But it very rapidly proved that it was impossible to sell such a rarefied device for so much money. And the pop world took it over.
Right, and it was very expensive back in those days.
The first one was $13,000. The third one was about $300,000.
Right.
And in fact, it's still very much in use. Even that great film that, you know, the one about the German ship that sunk called the Teutonic. That soundtrack was all done on Synclavier, still is used by the premier studios because of its ease of use. But I don't think anybody plays it live for the purposes that I originally helped design it.
When I first was in Vermont, the first few years I started hearing about it, and then I got to actually visit the place of manufacture in the early 80s, and there were some support people on the telephone with pop stars from around the country who were demanding their repairs immediately. It was quite a scene. I love that idea that in this little town in Norwich, Vermont, people were shipping out this equipment and giving support to some of the top people in the entire country. It was amazing.
It was a very interesting chapter, one that I'm glad has been closed in my life.
Why is that?
Well, because the premise was that you could make electroacoustic more attractive to people by performing it live. That turned out to be incorrect.
What happened?
Well, you see, I used to believe that that was possible, but I don't believe it anymore. Because it's like food. Music is like food. Some people are just curious about trying new food. So that if you give them, you know, inusashi or nekosashi or omankosashi or, you know, some kind of strange food, some people will say, well, I'm not going to eat that. And other people will be quite willing to try it. That's what music is like. It doesn't matter how it's produced. Some people are interested in trying something new and some people are not. It doesn't matter whether it's played live or over CD or the radio or the internet or whatever.
So there's a problem with electroacoustic music, is that what you're saying? With the way the audience perceives it or the way composers create it?
It's a minority music. It's a music that appeals to only a small group of people who are curious about new sounds.
Shall we hear some?
That sounds like a terrific
idea. We got some words in, so let's hear some music. We've got the first one up that you suggested we listen to.
Brush Canyon.
Brush Canyon.
Right. Brush Canyon is the little canyon north on Canyon Drive in Hollywood where I grew up. You've seen it because you've seen it in westerns where they filmed these horses running into the canyon or the Indians chasing the cowboys into the canyon. And so I used to play up there, and so this recalls that canyon. But it is a piece also that I used to play live on the synclavier.
Uh-huh. Let's hear it. This is on this great Centaur CD series, the Computer Music Series, Volume 6. We've played a number of pieces from the series. We played the Joan LaBarbera piece. We played Laurie Spiegel pieces. Just a whole bunch of them. They're really, really nifty. This one, Brush Canyon, from 1983, looks like.
That's almost yesterday, isn't it?
Almost yesterday. Here it is, music by John Appleton.
Thank you.
Brush Canyon, music by John Appleton. From 15 years ago, gosh, you said you were, well, we were off mic, you said that you still remembered playing it. And
yeah.
you played this live.
That was part of a program that I toured with for a few years. And yes, I do remember quite well playing it. That was a wonderful thing about the synclavier. It always worked.
Well, it was a very sturdy.
It was very sturdy.
Item.
It was very heavy.
Very heavy.
I finally stopped touring because it cost me more to transport the instrument, which weighed about 450 pounds, than I could earn for the concerts I gave. So I stopped. Also, I discovered in the process, I'd always wanted to be a performer when I was a kid, and I discovered that I really don't like it. Playing the same pieces over and over is very boring. I'd much rather be writing new ones.
Which we are about to hear. We're going to make a 15-year leap.
Right. Well, it is a 15-year leap in chronology, but aesthetically...
Still Rachmaninoff.
No, it's like the pieces that for which I first became known, they were kind of movies for the blind. This is a great piece. It doesn't work for Americans and it doesn't work for Japanese.
Well, wait, no. It doesn't work for me.
I know. I just discovered that listening to it today in the automobile driving here. But I figured we could talk about what this piece is.
All right. Do you want to hear it first and then come back to it?
Well, let's give a little introduction. So I will speak in English and then... my colleague Hayashi Akinori will translate what I say. All right, this is a piece which tries to capture the sounds of Tokyo.
この音楽は東京の音を捉えた音楽です。
It is a piece that in which you hear the sounds one might hear if you were on the Yamanote line, which circles central Tokyo.
この音は、東京を環状に走っている山手線に乗ったら聞こえるような音です。
On this train, you hear the sounds from the stations, from radios, from every possible source, including traditional instruments like the shakhach.
これは様々な音が含まれています。例えば、ラジオの音や宣伝の音、中にも、尺八と呼ばれる日本の伝統的な楽器の音も含まれています。
So, in driving up here today, I realized because my friend Jonathan Ross was driving and it was his CD player we were using, and I imagined how he must hear the piece, and I thought, well, this would only be a piece that would be attractive to someone.An American who had been in Tokyo and heard all these sounds, but if you hadn't been there, it might not mean anything to you. And so I turned to my friend Hayashi Akinori, and I said, but what does it mean to you? And, well, this is what he said. He said to me, O chinchu no sabote. Go ahead.
この音楽は、アメリカ人にとっては多分、もし、アメリカに行ったことない方がですね、聞くと、全く意味のない音楽に聞こえるでしょう。また、ある意味で、日本人にとっても、全くアメリカ人的な日本の音に聞こえると思います。
どうもありがとうございました。So, why don't we hear this piece then called, Yamanote-sen Toko, and Ko is the nickname of Umezaki Kojiro.Who plays the shakuhachi in this recording and who is, in fact, celebrating his 30th birthday in New York today. So this is in honor of his birthday, Umezaki Kojiro, and the name of the piece, Yamanote-sen Toko.
Music by John Appleton, our guest today.
Let's take a trip to Japan.
Your trip will be much more enjoyable when you can meet people and make yourself understood.
Listen to this recording and repeat what you hear. Listen, then repeat.
山手線はどこですか？
私は JR の駅で音楽と同じように尺八の音楽が好きです。
私は JR の駅で聞く音楽と同じように尺八の音楽が好きです。
Thank you. 本日も JR 秋葉原駅をご利用いただきましてありがとうございます。ただいま電気の改札口が改札口にしており、
この病院で喘息の治療を受けている患者さんの数は400人、その数は最近は増えています。呼吸器系の内科医師徳本由香さんは4年前から喘息の患者さんに増えたことで、今までの問題のことを調べていました。
Music by John Appleton, Yamanata. Let me try it. Yamanata San Toko.
Perfect.
Your
tickets are waiting in the lobby.
I'm ready for them. Well, tell me a couple of things. First of all, you seemed off mic very ambivalent about the piece. Not only what you told us when we were talking before we played it about audiences, maybe on either Americans or Japanese not responding to it for various reasons. Maybe you could go into a little bit about the Yam song, and also about your own ambivalence about this piece. You said that you're not sure it's a great piece.
Well, I started doing these pieces way back in 67, 66, where I took the sounds of a culture where I was visiting or recorded, and I mixed them and tried to give the impression or sometimes tell a story. Some of these were very good, like Times Square Times 10, I think is a real classic, and it's, I did that in 1970. And so I really have confidence in it. There were other times that I did it more recently that I felt it was, my association with the sounds were so personal that it didn't really communicate to the audience. I did a piece using the voice of the late Russian singer Dmitry Pokrovsky, and I recorded a lot of songs, Stalinist songs, and these are songs that for me have a real personal history, but to anybody else they wouldn't even get what's this about, you know. This was our songs about Stalin bringing light to the little villages in Russia and stuff. So I to make pieces out of a pre-existing music, that's fine, but if the music itself and the associations don't mean anything to the listener, then I guess it's not a terribly successful work as far as communicating my feelings. Mm. And I think feelings, for me, are the reason that I compose music. I'm not interested in much in the intellectual side of music, but rather in the emotional side of it and how people are moved by music and what that means to them.
I see, okay.
I thought this piece, though, in particular, had both the yin and the yang and, of course, the yam. And I thought it had the trichotomy, which was particularly appealing.
Well, you see, you're my first fan for Yamanotes and Toko, but which hasn't been really played. I'm sure this is the first time it has been broadcast. So this is a radio premiere.
Oh, right. We're glad about that. How about your relationship to Japanese culture? You didn't actually, other than being born in Hollywood, you didn't point out in your history about that, and particularly why, where you've learned the language and why you would be spending time in Tokyo.
About a few years ago, I was trying to extricate myself from a relationship in the United States, and I thought the best way to do that would to be to travel 9,000 miles away, and I had an opportunity to teach in Tokyo. And I went there, having been in Japan once for 10 days in 84, but never having really known anything about it, but I thought it would be a challenge. I didn't speak any Japanese, I still don't. I only teach in English. I know a few phrases, and they're obscene. So I went there, and I was captivated by it, because I thought, first of all, I had spent so many years in the countryside of Vermont, and here to be in the middle of a big city where I felt as safe as I do in the countryside of Vermont is quite wonderful. And I like the idea of being in a culture where I don't really understand not just the language, but the meaning of people. And, you know, it's a cliche, perhaps, that Japanese people to Americans are like onions. You keep peeling away the layers and find layers beneath it. And I still don't think I have any insight into Japanese personality. But that's intriguing to me. So I taught there, actually. I started by teaching a course in American history from 1945 to the present. Having lived during that period, I thought I was an expert. And then I started to teach a course in the arts and American culture, and I'm going back to do that next year. I like it very much.
Aha, uh-huh, great.
It's kind of a second home.
How long did you spend there altogether?
Well, 2 5-month periods, uh-huh. And this, I'll go back for a little more. I don't know. I've lived in a lot of places in the world, and I'm sure they'll maybe find some other place that will appeal to me, too. But maybe some of the places that you read weather forecasts for.
Yeah, maybe. We've played a couple of other pieces that incorporate local sounds and kind of an... I don't know. How would you describe the... Not even the form, but how would you describe the piece as sort of a... category, if you will. I'm just asking.
Collage.
All right, collage. Yeah. And we played excerpts from Clarence Barlow's CCU, which was done from Calcutta, and certainly some of Carl Stone's pieces, which also.
Right, but his are much more focused and draw the single sound drawn out.
I was thinking in terms of, I think Young Jump is a piece that's. Mm-hmm. From many, many little cuts recorded off the radio and on the street as well.
Right, and named for his favorite Thai restaurant.
Yes. Each of those pieces are very different ways of bringing this together. Yours gives us time to hear words.
Yes.
And Carl's gives us a highly rhythmic look at it, and Barlow's is kind of almost a great architecture of sound. Very different way of.
I think that's a good way of describing them, and I'm interested in that programmatic aspect to music. I still love Peter and the Wolf very much.
Which?
And I've done, by the way, a lot of children's music.
Aha! Peter and the Wolf was played on Vermont Public Radio this morning. So
that's a little
right
avant-garde
tune.
For them.
You're right in tune. Children's music. Let's hear about the children's music. Does that lead into these that we're about to play? Or
no,
what?
But okay. But I've done first. I did actually in Vermont at Old Philo Records. I did a Folkways released 2 children's pieces: The Tale of William Mariner and The Snow Queen. These were tales that I told and played on the synclavier, the accompaniment, at the same time. Then a few years ago, I did pieces for children's choirs in France, but this quite spectacular, really. 5,000 children singing at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah, and that is a quite remarkable thing to do. I did one again on the South Pacific And then I did one on Hopi Indians, legends, and so on and so. So I have this love of working with dramatic situations in music. And so now these pieces that you're turning to
From a brand new compact disc called Contre la Mémoire. This is just out recently?
A year ago.
A year ago, yeah.
And it's produced by those wonderful friends north of us in Quebec. Diffusion et Media,
right.
Jean-François Denis, et tous les gens, c'est très agréable.
And we will be getting a little chunk of recordings from them in the next few weeks. They're sending down a large part of their catalog, so we're looking forward to also a trip up there, an interview tour.
You'll have a wonderful time. That is a vibrant electroacoustic music culture in Quebec and Montreal right now. Anyway, these two pieces. In 1969... I was doing electroacoustic music. We called it electronic music then.
Right.
Nobody seemed to know what it was, and that bothered me because here I was dedicating my life to it. And so I said, I was stuck in the Newark airport, and I interviewed people. I said I was from a radio station, and I said, what do you think of the new electronic music? And then I recorded all, you know, 100 different responses, and I cut out the best ones, and I put them together over a kind of Moog synthesizer background, and that's what this piece is. And it's meant to be humorous, and it was released, in fact, on a 45 single by the Flying Dutchman Company in 1969.
So this is Newark Airport Rock. Do you want to go right into the next one?
No, why don't we stop?
Take a break. Okay. Here it is, music by our guest John Appleton. Oh, and while we're speaking to him, listen to that, let's have a phone ring. It would be really great to hear a pledge, particularly from someone in the far distance. The number is 802-454-7762. Now back to the music. Here it is, Newark Airport Rock by John Appleton from 1969.
I haven't the faintest idea.
Oh, I like it very much.
It's all right.
I never heard of it. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
I really hadn't noticed the difference, frankly.
It makes the new electronic music.
I can no speak English. King for it.
We have a FM radio in the office going, and we have different stations. I didn't know it was electronic. Yeah, we'll go with it.
Sounds very good. It's relaxing.
You'll hear it when you want to hear it. You'll either shut it out or listen to it as you want.
You like it?
It's wicked.
What is new electronic music?
Oh, I'm
great.
Hey. We don't get enough of the neon.
I think it's lovely.
Oh, I think it's very nice.
The new electronic music. Fine. Fine, me.
Here? To tell you the truth, I haven't heard any of it. It's really neat, yeah.
It's cool.
I haven't even heard it, to tell you the truth, that I know of.
Talking about tape music?
Yes.
Oh, I have a tape machine, and it's excellent.
But it's all right, you know.
The new what?
Some of it gives me a headache.
The new what?
I enjoy it.
I like concert music.
We need something while we're waiting.
I think it's a beautiful thing. I think it's really nice.
Day myself. That's great. That's Newark Airport Rock from 1969 by John Appleton.
Wait, this is only one of two airports, is it not?
That's right.
Because
in 1996 I redid the piece at the suggestion of Esme Thompson, once my wife, and actually she was my third wife, but. And But in 1969, what was wonderful is, if you know the situation, nobody who answered that question knew what electroacoustic music was, or yes, electronic music. They said, oh, you mean tape music? No, I have a tape machine. I like it. Or, of course, you know the thing we hear on the airplanes, or we need something while we're waiting. That's a common theme. Or, oh, it's cool. That's from a young girl who wants to be with it. Everything's cool. Everything's wonderful. Today they'd say, awesome, wonderful. So that's how the history of that piece evolved. And
then you went to San Francisco.
And then in 1996, I recorded in San Francisco. This time I put the responses, I edited the best responses, and I put them over a very kind of gentle, spacey MIDI track. So it has the feel of the 90s, but the questions are, well, why don't you listen to
it? And this is a radio program of the 90s, if ever there was one.
So San Francisco Airport Rock.
1996 by John Appleton.
I listen to it, which I don't a lot. I find it soothing.
The new electronic music.
Well, I don't know too much about that kind of music.
I met Moog when he first came out with the synthesizer. Exciting in the sense of the way that computer technology has made it for us a new way of self-expression and a way of life.
It's just designed to keep people in some sort of stasis while the drugs are working, basically.
On the plane?
Yes.
Oh, it's nice. Keeps you occupied while you're on the plane.
Just while the drugs are working.
I like good music.
Love Go Quest. Yeah. Okay. Listen to Go. Love Koya Satsuki.
Sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. I just come from England.
The digital music that comes out today?
Yeah.
I love it. It's really cool.
I don't buy it necessarily, but it's still on the radio.
I think it's great. He works for IBM, and so we could get it at any time.
I've got a CD called Lonely Planet.
That's really good to ask because I'm not really familiar with it.
Native music with an enhancement of electronics and sound. That's very good.
I think that's great. I like that myself personally. When people feel like they need a little bit of boost into the music, I think that's one of the best things they can possibly have done. Whoever created that would kiss.
Am I supposed to hear something?
You mean like the music you hear in elevators?
I really haven't heard any.
No, it's not real.
I do not like synthesized music at all.
Well, I prefer music played by musicians without the without computers, which is actually interesting because I'm a musician and I work with computers.
I like it. I'm a computer person.
Which electronic music are you speaking about?
Like techno, rave, that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
I've heard some, I like it. It's cool, yeah.
I guess the answer is no.
For instance, if you are at a concert and someone has a very soft voice and you have all this other music and it makes it stronger and clearer and so forth, I have no objections.
I think I can hear it. Can you hear it?
Well, it sounds very good.
Socks.
Right. We're going to a jazz festival, and we like real jazz played by real performers.
Socks.
Well, I think all music is just great.
Socks.
All synthesizer stuff. Well, that's okay.
Socks.
I suppose you were able to get signed releases from all the people whose voices you quoted. Oh, yes, that particular. San Francisco Airport Rock, 1996, by our guest John Appleton.
Oh, my. Hi. That's just the difference in eras and the way people will still say the same things. Wow.
That's right.
That's just remarkable.
That is kind of remarkable. You get a general awareness that some people do know what it is now, or at least they know that it involves computers, that it's synthesized sound. It involves electronics. Some people know that.
Right.
And so there is a greater level of awareness, although someone said to me, that's just because you were in the San Francisco airport. If you had been in the Newark airport in 1996, you still would have gotten the same response.
Well, it's interesting because whether it's either yesterday or the day before on CNN's entertainment show, they said, and upcoming, a look at electronic music and how it's sweeping the world. And I thought, whoa, what? What did I miss? You know, and then they had a series of interviews on rave and on techno and on all sorts of other forms that are using the instruments in the sort of pop way and the use of the sampler and all of that as a pop form. And I was pretty stunned that not one single example of the other realm of that appears. But I guess concert music, no matter what you call it, is still that really niche-y kind of thing.
That's right. And you know that this idea of the more things change, the more they stay the same. Well, when we first were inventing the synclavier, I had this feeling that it was a revolutionary breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing different radio shows about it and demonstrating it. And the thing that people always said about it, this is amazing. One man can sound like a whole orchestra. I began to look back in history and discovered that the earliest mechanical instruments, that was the same thing that they said about them. The whole idea was they were great because one person could sound like many musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the differences between these instruments, it's still used as hype. That's what Yamaha uses, Roland, all of those companies,
right,
to sell their synthesizers. One man, well, one person, can sound like a whole orchestra. And that's what I've dedicated my life to.
Well, you're not off yet now. We're not done with you yet. We have to do the future thing.
The future, what's going to happen in the future?
Well, no, you know, I mean, it's easy to get off and say, well, I don't know. I look at Wagner, he didn't know either, or something like that. But seriously, you're going somewhere with your music. Where is it? Where are you headed? Where do you think it's...
With my music or with musical culture?
Well, I'll take them both if you would like.
Well, with my music, I'm going backwards. I'm writing the most romantic music I can. It may be a temporary phase, but I'm trying to get at what moves people the most within the cultural framework I have inherited. I don't know if I'll be able to do that or if I'm just going back to my roots. I don't feel avant-garde or the motivation to be so anymore, and I once did. I once took pride in the fact that people didn't understand what I was doing, and now I don't anymore. I don't really care what anybody thinks. I just do the music that I find beautiful. So if there is any pleasure in being older, that is it. Now, as far as the culture is going, I don't think that one can say much about the future of electroacoustic music except what Steve Reich said almost 30 years ago, that it will disappear into the fabric of just plain music. And I agree with that. I think that electroacoustic music has never been a style. It has been a medium of expression. And so I think more interesting is the means of distribution and the enormous amount of music that is available. You just spoke earlier about all the CDs that were suddenly in your lap of new and experimental music that it was hard for you even to sort through it.
But not only so many, but so much of it was so wonderful.
Right, and I think that that's more the case now, that we have such an embarrassment of riches that it will be very difficult for people to make decisions. It's like getting sucked into the web. You know, you start surfing the web, all of a sudden 10 hours goes by, so you better not even go near it. And I don't know how people are going to sample all the music that's available to them, but I think it is wonderful that much more music is available to them on the Internet, and that they will be able to try out musics that they never knew existed before, and maybe they will be able to access that music directly. It seems outrageous to me. I remember when I was a kid growing up in Hollywood, on Santa Monica Boulevard, there was a record store, and you could walk by, and on the street were the windows where there were these little booths where people would listen to records. You checked out a record, and you went in, and you put it on the turntable and listened to it. Well, that was a 78, so it was sort of indestructible. And nobody cared, you know. If you want to buy a record, you got to have a chance to hear it. How did that suddenly disappear, and people had to buy LPs on the basis of what was on the cover? Right. And still, yeah, we're okay because they were scratchable. Now we're in the CD culture. You can't do anything to a CD unless you really try hard. But people don't let you listen to this stuff. You have to buy it by the cover, and the cover's small.
And now the cover's small.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and there's so much hype and stuff. I don't know how people make any decisions. So the joy of the Internet is that it's going to let people sample music and try out all kinds of music that they've never heard before, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
You headed there? You're creating any pieces specifically for the medium?
Nobody's asked me to yet, but I will.
Hey, we're asking.
Okay, you got it.
we're beginning an experimental project with some of our composers to create some pieces specifically for the Calvus and Damien site, in the idea that there's kind of an interaction that's happened there. Many composers are now really connecting with each other through online mentoring programs we've had and a few other things. So we are just starting with the idea of creating pieces for the medium.
Well, sounds like a great idea.
That's
It's you young folks that really are going to be able to do important things in the world.
Yeah, we got to talk to somebody who was older than us for a change.
It's about time.
Let's, speaking of about time, say that it is WGDR Plainfield, and we are in the middle of fundraising. It is 802-454-7762, and we would love to have your call. And John has his hands up.
Oh, I just have to leave pretty soon.
Well, then let's put something else on. Let's leave with your preference.
Oh, boy.
We have something new, something old.
Do you have anything with a beat? I mean, enough.
Yes.
Oh, you do. We would like something with rhythmic interest.
Okay, you've got it. A piece done in 1970, 71 on that private edition CD. This is a piece that I did in collaboration with Don Cherry, the late and great American jazz and experimental musician.
Yes.
We worked together for a year, and we released a record on Flying Dutchman, an album called Human Music. And here I'm playing a Moog synthesizer, and I'm processing the sounds that Don is making on a variety of percussion instruments and wind instruments, including a flute and his famous pocket trumpet. This is, I think, Bao, is that right?
It is, from Human Music.
From Human Music, 1970 or something.
69.
1969, my God. I knew 69 was my favorite year.
And we'll see the Woodstock influence in this piece.
Definitely, and it has a beat, believe me.
Well, that's what we want. John Appleton, thanks bundles and oodles for being a guest on the Calvus and Damien New Music Bazaar. We would like to present you with this official autographed copy of the Carmora Papers by Calvus Gazzampa himself.
Thank you so much, and it has been a great pleasure. Boris, my friend, also says, спасибо большое, and domo arigato gozaimashita. Thank you so much.
До свидания.
До свидания. Thank you.
Bow from Human Music. That by John Appleton and Don Cherry from 1969. And John's just wrapping up here and getting his goods together to go out the door. And in the as he's getting ready, I'm just thinking about this today's birthdays and death days, which you so kindly create every week.
Oh, those.
Those.
And Liberace, you wanted to celebrate
Liberace? I was thinking about Liberace, but then I thought about Django Reinhardt. And it occurred to me that I should play something because there are influences that sneak in underneath our sort of brains that we don't even know are there and come out later. So here's a from a wonderful CD with Stefan Grappelli. This is Djangology. And then I'm going to play a piece of mine, the opening section of a piece called A Time Machine. You know A Time Machine.
Yes, it's influenced heavily by Liberace.
But I don't know if you've heard this particular piece, Djangology, and I think you'll be amused, and of course our listeners may have something to say about what I may or may not have stolen in the course of my subconscious composition.
Of course.
So here they are in a row. how we do steal and don't even know we've done it.
Sure, it was just strictly accidental.
I mean, just made its way in there.
Maybe.
But there it came out again in a different direction. But I did shave one 16th note out of the pattern. So.
But you used it later on, did you not? That 16th? I thought it reappeared somewhere
I collected
else.
Them in a bucket.
In a bucket,
bucket,
yes.
And saved it for later. So we, as was mentioned earlier, we did get sort of deluged with new releases in the past couple of weeks, and one by Donald Erb. What can you do with a couple of trumpets?
Is this a rhetorical question?
That's a rhetorical question. You played the Stravinsky fanfare for two trumpets at one point for one of the shows, and here this thing from Donald Erb came in the mail, and I said, "What? Five movements for two trumpets?" And sure enough, this guy's good.
Oh well, play something.
Let's listen to just two of these cuts, then we'll come back with one more. In the meantime, 454-7762 for your pledge to WGDR and to the Calvis and Damian New Music Bazaar. And the premiums include a copy of Detritus of Mating, the electroacoustic CD, something like that, for a $25 pledge, or the Frog Peak Collaborations Project CD for a $50 pledge. That's a two CD set.
We also have, for a $40 pledge, a pair of tickets to last night's concert in Barrie by flutist Karen Kevra. Now,
does it include the time machine to get there?
No, but we do figure we can dump you into an Algonquin hole, and with a bit of luck, you will materialize just before concert time.
Let's listen to Donald Erb.
Thank you.
There's the first of those five movements for two trumpets. What do you think of that?
Very, very charming. You can do something without engaging in an adult film with two trumpets.
That's absolutely right. Well, that's the Calvus and Damien New Music Bazaar for today. Gosh, that went fast.
It did, and it was not interrupted by the calling of wanton telephones for servicing our fiduciary needs here.
Yes, that's the only disappointing part. We could have used a phone call or two today on this lovely Saturday afternoon after having given all of those weather reports.
Exactly. And there's still time to call the next programmer, who I'm sure would be delighted to hear from you, 454-7762. That is 802 Glipstob in this and other hemispheres.
Let's wrap up with the last of the five movements of Donald Erb's thing for two trumpets.
Thing
called,
for two trumpets?
Yeah, it's called... I couldn't do that. It says, Remembrances. This is Fanfare Number 2, even though it's the fifth movement.
Ah, Fanfare Number 2. Donald Erb, Calvus and Damien. Till next week.
A production of Multimedia.